Welcome to the Big 60s Sort Out, brought to you by the Big Beatles Sort Out. We've spent three series sorting the Beatles, and now we're turning our attention to the competition, the context, the bigger picture. Who were they up against? What music influenced them? And will we hear the shockwaves of the Beatles' epic success as we sort all the UK number ones from the 1960s by ranking them for music, lyrics and production? Thanks for joining us as we try and sort out the 60s. Welcome to Series 4, Episode 18. I'm Gary Abbott, author, musician, podcaster, and please welcome my popular music history expert brother, Paul.
Hello everyone, hope everyone is okay, and I hope by the time this comes out, the weather is better wherever you are than it is currently in Liverpool, which is horrible.
And has been for months.
Yes, as if you wouldn't know that we're a British podcast, I've opened with talking about the weather.
Weather chat.
Yeah.
I'm going to get this out of the way early doors. Please keep in touch with us on Twitter and Instagram at @big_sort or email us at bigbeatlessortout@gmail.com. And please do like, subscribe and review our show if you would be so kind. So this week, anyway, we have an album special. So like we did after we'd finished 1960 and 1961, mm-hmm. We did a couple of years kind of retrospective of the albums that were out around the time. None of that, just kind of, well, you know, we're talking about the hits, the singles, what was going on in that other strange world of albums, and we thought we'd just do the same thing again. A couple of years, another 2 years down the line, we've done 62 and 63 now.
Yeah, or we will do 62 and 63 albums.
Well, yes, we've done second. Yes, we've done the hits, and now we're going to look at the albums, is what I was saying.
Yes, and I think it's going to be interesting because, so I don't actually know that it's going to be worth doing the album check-in for every couple of years, because it's going to change quite a lot from here on in from what we had in 60 and 61, because at the position of the album as an object changes. So actually, probably will do it just to see that. I don't know. Shut up, Paul.
Okay. Let's just see what happens. But before we get onto all that, let's do some general chit chat.
I thought you were just going to leave the word chit hanging in the
some
air.
Some general
then.
Chit.
Chat.
About the Beatles and stuff. We've got some news, haven't we? We've got, not us personally, but the world of the Beatles has some news.
No, don't say that we've got news as well. Otherwise, yeah. All the poor people online will go.
Oh God, no, we're not going anywhere. Much. We'll talk about that too. Let's talk about the Beatles first. Let's talk about the teaser and reveal that's happened this week, Paul.
Yeah, well, I mean, as always, we are recording this
a fortnight
close to the news, but you're getting it a fortnight later with our finger on the pulse.
Yes, yeah. We don't scramble for news, do we? It doesn't make any
sense. No, we get to it eventually.
By the time you hear this, though, you'll have digested it. So this will be...
So this will be entirely irrelevant for us to say.
Yeah, no, that doesn't work, does it? I can say, so that'll make it just something you've already eaten. That doesn't work.
No.
You'll have a time to reflect on it, and you'll be listening to us with hindsight, and which is always going to give you more insight than we're about to tell you.
Oh, dear me. Fallen apart already. Okay, Let It Be.
Let It Be.
Yeah, so we knew when Apple announced that this new film, as it was at the time, was going to be made of the Beatles, you know, sessions and the rooftop gig and all that stuff, the Get Back piles of film and audio that there was, that Peter Jackson was going to do something. We knew at the time that they announced it, which was on the 30th of January 2019,
yeah,
which was the 50th anniversary of the rooftop concert, that Peter Jackson was doing an as yet untitled movie for the cinema, but it had the announcement in it, following the release of this new film, a restored version of the original Let It Be movie directed by Michael Lindsay Hogg will also be made available.
Yes.
And everyone was like, wow, finally, after 40-odd years or something like that, since it had last been available on... it wasn't quite 40 years at that time, but since it had last been available on home media. Because it only ever had a very limited release on VHS, Laserdisc, I think, briefly. But I'm not an expert in that at all. And so everyone was really excited about, ooh, new stuff from the Get Back footage. And we're going to get Let It Be. And of course, the Get Back comes out. Everyone goes nuts for it. It's not a film. It's a series, and it's really, really long. You know, it's Peter Jackson size. and could still be longer if Peter Jackson got his way, and if only.
Mm-hmm.
But no sign of Let It Be.
No, and just they just dropped off the radar, didn't it, altogether?
Yeah, and you just think, oh, is this another one of those things where they've silently sort of gone, well, we don't need it now. We've got this big alternative version of it. Which is what I think people worry about with like the box sets and remasters, is that it somehow sweeps away the original
version of things.
And obviously there's a risk of that, but this seemed very much like that was it. But they've done it. They've announced it here now, sort of to the public, basically 5 years after they said it was going to come out.
When was... Was it back last year? Or have I skipped a year? Was it the year before?
It was 2021. Yes.
Oh, blimey, I've skipped 3 years.
That's the pandemic, man.
It is the pandemic, isn't it? Because, I understand them not wanting to... You know, the huge success of Get Back.
Yeah, they weren't going to tread on its toes by any means.
Let that tail off a bit, because you are retreading a lot of the same ground with Let It Be.
Although not of the same footage, amazingly.
No, but then we've also had Now and Then since then. So, you know, finding the right time in the calendar for it all.
Yes. Well, I think that's the big thing with Apple, is they've always got not just Beatles things to think about and plan ahead for.
Mm-hmm.
But they've also got to balance that out against Lennon estate stuff, McCartney's projects,
solo stuff,
things that Ringo's doing, stuff like George's, Dark Horse Records and things like that.
Mm.
And I suspect now as well, you're factoring in the sort of the Beatle families as well and their various projects.
Yeah.
Although I'm sure, a Sean Lennon thing wouldn't necessarily hold up a Beatles product, but I suspect it factors into the discussions a little bit.
Yeah.
If, say Sean's going to put out an album, or James McCartney is doing something. But yeah, it seems so odd though that, Disney Plus 2021, we get Back. We have a vanilla Blu-ray release of it, and everyone's like, oh, I wanted Peter Jackson-esque. This is how we got the orcs up a castle type thing, but we don't get that. And nothing, and then nothing, and then nothing, and then, Let It Be's coming.
Yeah. Next month, May, isn't it?
Something so May. Probably the week after this goes out, I think.
Yeah, so that should be fun. I mean, I don't think we need to scramble again to do anything with it, because we covered Let It Be, and saying, ooh, isn't it more clear to look at and listen to, it's going to be the same edit and cut, isn't
it? So, well, we covered it in our movie special series, which I think was season two of our podcast, was
possibly?
It?
Possibly.
It was episode 60 anyway, so yeah, it must have been.
Yeah.
Released on the 18th of April 2022. So we'd have done that having watched Get Back. I cannot remember what we said about it, but I think we probably said what I've always thought, which is Let It Be is nowhere near as bad as its reputation.
No.
Emotionally.
Yeah.
Speaking is to be. I lost the start of that sentence and didn't know where I was at the end of it. Sorry. But yeah, my concern here is that obviously they've applied a lot of Peter Jackson style restoration technology into the sound and the picture.
Yeah.
I do struggle a bit with some of what happens in Get Back, where it does look a bit too much smoothing, a bit too much application of a technology to the image particularly. But there is some talk that Michael Lindsay-Hogg has said, basically, I want it to look a bit more filmic.
Right.
So don't make it look exactly like Get Back, but I don't know if that means dial back the restoration technology or what, I don't know.
We'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah. But what's important is Peter Jackson basically saying, you've got to have Let It Be out there. That is the thing that we accompany. You know, that's the real product. That's and that is. It's part of Beatles canon. So
yes, of course it is. Yeah.
So finally, looking forward to seeing it in a shiny format. Yeah.
Get Back was essentially the Let It Be DVD extras in a streaming age with Peter Jackson on. Jackson?
Shut up. Peter Jackson.
Peter Jackson's on board. With Peter Jackson on board, isn't it? Really? Get Back is the unused bit of Let It Be. but restored. So,
but with a calendar stuck in it to create jeopardy.
Yeah, so it's all part of the same thing. So that's some good news too, isn't it? So that's something else interesting. So on to wider, more meta Beatlesverse news. We're hearing today about a couple of our... What's the word?
I don't want to say contemporaries because I don't feel like we're quite that big.
No, we're not. Yeah. Well,
a couple of the Beatles podcast luminaries hanging up their headphones.
Yeah.
Essentially. So we found out that the live Eggpod show this year, which sadly we can't make anyway.
No.
Due to being off somewhere else playing Beatles songs, ironically.
Yes.
Is going to be the last Eggpod of all.
Yeah.
And so that's a real shame.
It is. Yeah. Really wasn't expecting that. I mean, I've not kept tabs on what's left out there he could be talking to people about anyway, but I mean, I'm presuming Chris has covered most, if not all, of the ground out there, but you could have thought, you would think that there would always be, everyone would still want to listen, even if they went back over it all again, you know.
Yes, got such
a good way of presenting it all, and such an integral part of why I asked you if you wanted to start this with me was listening to the Eggpod.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, and then people reeling off the back of that then found out that nothing is real are stopping as well. Coming to a full stop, a permanent hiatus or something like that was the word they used, phrase they used, which is a real shame again because, you know, they were the leading lights of intensive research Beatles podcastery.
Yes. Yeah, so I hear. I've not spent as much time with them, although now I fully intend to.
Yeah, jumping on too late, aren't you now? You're like just...
It's funny, isn't it? Being producers of a Beatles podcast, I haven't got too much room for too much more Beatles podcasts in my ears. But I will. I know people really like them, and I want to go and listen to some now. But it's such a shame, because no doubt it'll be brilliant, and I'll be like, oh, I know it's ended.
Yes.
But I suppose I've got the entire series.
That's one of the good things about podcasts. Unless you're very strange and take it all offline, these things sit out there waiting to be discovered at different times.
We quite regularly, don't we, get a listener who's just like, just found you guys, steadily working my way through, and it's like...
Yeah, which is why I find it's very weird if anyone would start at the beginning where we're finding our feet, and also the bit in the middle where I literally have clinical depression and we're still going on and we're in the middle of a global pandemic and weird things like you changing job and I know that that's not things we talk about in the podcast, but it just strikes me as very weird that all that would be happening trapped in the time, in the amber of digital memories.
Yes, it is strange. I just always think it's wonderful that anyone spends any time kind of listening to us at all and then reaches out and to let us know.
Yes, it's amazing. It's always been amazing.
These two podcasts that are coming to a close count their listenership in their millions, I believe. And
where are those listeners going to go, Gary? Well, they've got to find somewhere.
There's a home right here. Yeah. I don't know what we're going to rank after, what we're going to sort even after this series.
Yeah, we don't do ranking. Ranking the Beatles do ranking. Yeah, we do sorting.
That's our stateside cousins. We'll leave that to those guys, but when it comes to sorting, goodness knows what we're gonna left after the
60. But we've got ages to go on this series, anyway, I know. So.
There's still plenty of time, and also three previous series to catch up on. So, we're not going anywhere, folks. So, don't worry if you know you're one of the select special few who actually listen to us, Don't worry, we're not going anywhere. But it is sad to see the end of Eggpod and nothing is real. And we wish them all the best for the future.
Yes, all lovely people and great leading lights for the podcast, the Beatles pod sphere, podverse, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And like I mentioned before, this all mainly sort of took off during the course of the global pandemic, and all these things were brilliant sort of lifelines for people, a sense of community over such a broad distances at a time when we were all in strange circumstances, and it's sad to see him go.
It is. Anyway, so let's get on with our little podcast then, with our little corner of Beatle fandom that we
occupy,
custodians for, and
custodians,
our small yet mighty listenership.
Here they come to save the day.
Yes, we are listened to exclusively by mice.
Yes.
Tiny
mice.
We're listened to by some lovely, lovely people. Okay, we're going to look at, like we did, at the albums. We're going to take them chronologically and just have a little chat about them, aren't we, Paul? Just to see. I think last time round, if I remember rightly, I'm going off the top of my head here, which isn't a very reliable source. We had a lot of the Sound of Music. We had.
Well, do you want me to run down quickly what we had in the 1960 to 1961, or in fact 1958 to 1961?
Oh yes, because there was a lingering.
Because South Pacific basically dominated as the number one album for several years, and keeps popping back. So we had that absolutely. It's insane the amount of time South Pacific was the number one album in the UK. Mm-hmm. But we also had the Explosive Freddie Cannon, a name we're never going to hear again.
Yeah,
we have Elvis doing Elvis Is Back, his post. Post Elvis, yes, Elvis Is Back, Gary. Elvis very good. Back. His post Army album, his first post Army. We have the 101 Strings doing Down Drury Lane to Memory Lane.
Yeah.
We have the Elvis Presley G.I. Blues soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have the George Mitchell Minstrels turn up with the Black and White Show and another Black and White Minstrel Show. And we also have the Shadows making their first appearance with The Shadows. And Cliff and the Shadows with 21 Today.
Right.
And that was where we left the 1960-1961.
So there was some Cliff Richard, there was some Shadows, there was some movie soundtracks and Elvis. I wonder what we'll get the last 2 years then, eh?
Yeah, 1962-1963.
So, go on then, kick us off.
Okay, so our first new number one album that takes us into 1962...
Mm.
It gets to number one on 31st of December 1961, so this is our New Year album.
Yeah.
It is Elvis Presley with the original soundtrack to Blue Hawaii.
Eat to eat like, teeth are out of style. Eat to eat like, teeth are out of style. Eat to eat like, teeth are out of style. Eat to eating all the while. Eat, eat to eat all the night and the day. Everybody, eat, eat to eat all the night and the day.
Ah, good old Elvis. And this time it's not his back singing, it's just him.
Yes, it's actually his front.
Mm, Elvis's front. Elvis's face.
Yeah, his face is doing some singing on this one, yeah. Definitely.
So Blue Hawaii. Whoa.
Yeah, so, okay, so we talked about Blue Hawaii a little bit because that's the film from which Can't Help Falling in Love is taken.
Right.
Which is a number one in the UK, as is Rockahoola Baby.
Rockahoola Baby, indeed, we've done that, yeah. So they're both on this album.
So they're both on the Blue Hawaii soundtrack. Right. But that's not what I gave you to listen to. I gave you Ito Eats.
Yes, that was
a song about a greedy Hawaiian.
Yes. Is it Elvis singing it?
It is Elvis singing it, yeah.
In his kind of...
quite a light, high voice, because he's doing a sort of funny song about someone who likes to eat... so hungry that he will eat the shell of a coconut.
Right. He's not doing an accent, is he?
He's doing a little bit of an island accent.
Yeah.
Not an island accent, an island, like a Hawaiian island native accent.
Yeah.
It's a bit, But luckily, the person who plays Ito, who is doing the eating, is actually played by a Hawaiian actor. So they've put white actors in the roles of native Hawaiians.
Hmm.
But it's quite a fun song, that one, Ito Eats. It's only like 2 minutes long or something like that, but it's literally just a... it's a perfect example of what is happening in Elvis films, which is just things just happen. It's like, are we going to fill up 3 minutes? Well, let's have a bit where they just call someone greedy and he sings a song.
I'm still tempted by a side pod where we just watch all the Elvis films.
Which, all of them.
All of them.
Well, Gary, let me just... So the period we're covering, right? So we've done 1962 to 1963 so far, during which time Elvis has made Flaming Star in 1960, Wild in the Country and Blue Hawaii in 1961. In 1962 makes Follow That Dream and Kid Galahad. In 1963 makes It Happened at the World's Fair and Fun in Acapulco. Right?
Mm.
We're not going to see Elvis in the charts again until 1965, by which time he'll have also made a film called Kissing Cousins, a film called Viva Las Vegas, a film called Roustabout, all in 1964, and then films Girl Happy, Tickle Me and Harem Scarum in 1965.
Did you say Roustabout?
I did say Roustabout, yes.
What's a Roustabout?
It's a Elvis film. And then he makes another 12 feature films after that until he starts, you know, it goes to just making concert films. But that's a lot of films.
Is Viva Las Vegas, that's the one he did with, what's her name?
Anne Margaret. I think that is.
Yeah, that is the one he did with Anne Margaret. That's what I want to watch.
Well, we'll watch, maybe we'll watch that then.
Yeah. I actually put a note after watching that biopic I was talking about the other day in the last podcast but one. I had to put a note to watch that one because that's where he started his affair with her as well.
Well, if anyone saw the graphic I put up for our episode that's out the week that we're recording this, episode 16, the Elvis image I put up was taken from Disc Magazine. It's Elvis in Love and it's him with Anne Margaret.
Ah.
So it wasn't like it was a hidden thing.
No, except that he was kind of betrothed, awaiting his wife to become old enough to be his wife at the time.
So it was a bit complicated.
But Anne Margaret, so she pops up because I'm a big fan of Tommy, but you know
the film
Tommy and its albums. So obviously I know her from that. And then she did that great song when we did. What was that for? What was the link to that? Why were we covering that one? It was one that the Beatles did a cover of.
Yeah, I Just
BBC.
Don't Understand on
yeah. And that was great.
It is, yeah. And she's clearly quite zany.
Yeah.
So, there you go.
And still with us, I think, still going.
Yeah. I believe so. But anyway, Blue Hawaii, original soundtrack album, spends 1 week and 17 weeks at number one.
Oh, okay.
So it dips out. 69 charting weeks in the UK, and it's in the top 40 of albums until the mid 70s, which is nuts.
Wow. Just for that one. Okay.
Yeah.
Right then. So that's enough of soundtrack albums. What knocks it off the top?
That would be the soundtrack to The Young Ones by Cliff Richard and the Shadows.
Ah, Cliff's back.
Cliff's back.
Cliff's face. So, The Young Ones.
Yeah, a film I have seen, but not for a very, very long time. And I think I mentioned that because obviously we've had singles from this, particularly The Young Ones, which was a number one, which we talked about. And there were other singles from this, like When the Girl in Your Arms is the Girl in Your Heart, which was a number three single.
Mm-hmm.
And this album spends 6 weeks at number one. It's obviously on Columbia, which is the record label for Cliff.
Mm-hmm.
And, so the thing I put on our playlist that we will have heard is The Savage by The Shadows, because I just like the fact that there's a couple of just Shadow songs on there as well.
Yeah. That's quite like that one, wasn't it? It's one that's got a bit of a Spanish kind of feel.
It's certainly modal.
Yeah, and strumming kind of, it's definitely of that ilk.
Yeah, and if I remember correctly, the sequence in the film where The Savage is played is The Shadows are on stage at some charity event for the youth club,
right?
And they're playing this, and they're obviously doing some of their little Shadow footsteps, which look so. It's sad to say, but they look terrible.
Yeah,
you know, they're not doing the full shadow walk, even if they're just moving their feet backwards and forwards, and this is like a close-up in the film. Mm. And there's a bit where they all turn left, and the audience, who's doing this terrible sort of neither on-beat nor off-beat clapping, you know, it's not in time at all. They turn left, and all the girls go, ah! And stop. And they do that for a bit, and then they turn right, and all the girls go, ah! And then they stop. It's just...
Are these the same girls shipped in from the Johnny Remember Me video who don't know how to...
I think they're younger than that, it looks like, the audience here. They're much more polite and sat in rows.
See, without knowing the name of knowing what goes on in the film and they're being called the young ones, I thought you were going to say this comes from the scene where Cliff Richard gets his flick knife out and has to have a fight with a rival gang. But it's not that kind of film, I'm thinking.
Hey. This... The film, London, 1961. The city's teenagers sing of the joys of Friday night, especially with a dance at the local youth club. There, Nicky Black sings a rock and roll number with his group. But Ernest, one of the members, reveals that the club is under threat of closure from the ruthless property developer, Hamilton Black. Unbeknown to his friends, Nicky is Hamilton's son, and Black Sr. gleefully accepts his offspring's challenge to save the club. So that's the...
Right.
Save the theatre type thing.
Right, okay. It's just the Blues Brothers.
Well, yes, apparently this is an inspiration on the Blues Brothers.
Okay.
Really. Except that's got more nunneries in it.
Yeah.
But yeah, they old, broken down old theatre, fix it up.
Do a big show, win the day.
Yeah, so hang on, meanwhile, Hamilton... easily defeating the Teddy Boys thanks to his mastery of judo.
Oh, so there is
a fight with Teddy Boys. Yeah. So there you go.
The Savage sounds like the soundtrack to a fight scene.
Except it's not. It's just the shadows on stage.
Okay. Well, there we go. Surprise, surprise. We're in 1962 and we're still getting Elvis and Cliff. Well, no, because we're in 1962, aren't we? So nothing else has erupted just yet.
Not really.
So... I've had enough of soundtracks, Paul. What's the next one?
Well, Gary, from the manuscript paper of Leonard Bernstein, we get the soundtrack to West Side Story.
Ah.
Dear kindly judge, your honor, my parents treat me rough with all their marijuana. They won't give me a puff. They didn't want to have me, but somehow I was had. Leap on lizards, that's why I'm so bad.
Right, Officer Krupp, he already a square. This boy don't need a judge, he needs an analyst care. It's just his neurosis that ought to be claimed. He's psychologically disturbed.
I'm disturbed.
We're disturbed. We're disturbed. We're the most disturbed.
So... another soundtrack, but at least this time not from a musical starring a pop star.
No,
indeed. An actual musical.
Yeah, a proper Broadway musical on screen.
Which has been turned into a film. I've never seen West Side Story.
I've never seen West Side Story. Not all the way through. I've seen bits and bobs.
Yeah, I know.
And it was remade recently, wasn't it? I think Steven Spielberg did a new version of it.
Yeah, and it's one where I know a lot of the songs from many a school orchestra medley.
Oh, yes, definitely.
You know, if you've not played a West Side Story...
someone with a shaker or something desperately trying to play the off...
Yeah.
The rhythms, the cross rhythms.
In fact, I had to play that on a snare at one point.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, if you've not played in a West Side Story school orchestra medley, then you've not lived.
No, indeed.
A British school... that has a music department. But then I tell you what didn't appear in that medley. Officer Krupel.
Krupel. Officer Krupel.
My note of auto-corrected. G. Officer Krupke song that you gave me as a reference.
Yeah, I looked through the list of things and I thought, well, he'll know some of these. He's likely to know Maria in America. And I Feel Pretty and things like that, really famous ones. I thought he's going to love G. Officer Krupke because it's the most musically, I think, out of all of them there.
Yeah, it's a lot of talking, but it's funny. I quite liked it listening to it.
It is quite good, actually. And I was watching the sequence today and I watched the version from the film in 1961 to the version of the 2021 version.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. And the original version is so much more fun. There's so much more colourful. Films are so dull now. Colour grading in films and everything.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But yeah, so I think if we had to do a watch along for something, West Side Story wouldn't be too bad.
No, I actually thought I might even watch this one day, listening to that.
Oh, wow.
It was quite funny. I like the fact that there was a kid complaining to the judge that he is disturbed.
Disturbed.
Because yeah. his parents smoke weed and don't let him have any. That yeah. was the joke. But and everyone again, and everyone, a big chorus of people going disturbed, disturbed.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's a huge hit anyway. I mean, a bit like South Pacific was. It is a huge hit. It spends 13 weeks at number one in fits and starts, 174 weeks in the charts in total, and it's the biggest selling album of 1961 in the UK. It's also, people say it's Thriller by Michael Jackson, but it's probably the album that has the longest run at number one in America as well.
Oh right.
But there's a strange way people count these things. Mentioned it last time, talking about South Pacific as well. And okay. Most people will know it's a modern retelling of Romeo and Juliet set in the Upper West Side of Manhattan.
Of course it is, yeah.
Well, yeah, it is.
Well, it is.
Yeah, it's very famous.
No, it is.
It's a very interesting place to set a film because it's all about juvenile delinquency, which was a huge 1950s media panic type thing.
Yeah.
The Upper West Side of Manhattan at that point being much more multiracial, not quite as, affluent as it is now. It's basically, I do a podcast about the 87th Precinct books of Ed McBain, of which there hasn't been a new episode for several years, but I do it. It still exists. And that's essentially set in this place. Ed McBain, otherwise known as Evan Hunter, who wrote The Blackboard Jungle, which was one of the big juvenile delinquent novels of the 50s that was subject to a moral panic, out of which comes Rock Around the Clock as a big success.
Right.
So it's all set in that sort of world, except this is obviously a big stagey Broadway musical.
Yeah.
So
that's why I was thinking with the Young Ones film, transposing him into West Side Story. I'm thinking, did they try and make a kind of a British West Side Story? But no, it was just saving a youth club. Okay, then. Well, I've had enough of soundtracks, Paul. And I've had enough of big, huge megastars. So let's have something else for our next one.
Okay. Well, how about Looks Around Nervously? Elvis Presley? But it's not a soundtrack album. Potluck by Elvis Presley.
Caution my baby to stay at home, not to leave mama's side. She laughed when I told her, take care, all you sharing his midnight ride. Since you stole her out of sight, I had a piece.
So, yeah, not a soundtrack. So, I mean, with the name of this album, have they just gone, well, whatever?
I think they have, Gary.
Whatever, you just buy it and you'll find out.
Essentially, so this spends 6 weeks at number one and it has 25 weeks in the chart overall. It's his seventh studio album and it's basically his last rock and roll album until 1969. Again, he does a gospel album and he obviously does all the film soundtrack albums. But essentially, this is the last of the Elvis studio albums until he breaks free of his film commitments in the late 60s.
Yeah.
And as such, it's got a block of things that were recorded in March of 1962, but some of the other stuff on it is like sessions from March of 1961 onwards. So that's a bit of the potluck type phrase is really, like you say, it's a bit of a grab bag
of... It's just a Presley soup.
Yeah, what have we got on the tapes that we can put together into an album.
It's funny to actually call it that, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I know, really. And it's got a terrible album cover. Really, really bad. It's literally just... The left-hand side of the album is a big yellow stripe with a pot drawn on it, and it says Potluck on it, with Elvis, lists the track. And then the right-hand side is just Elvis against a red background. His hair looks like it's trying to escape. And he looks a little bit, and I'm going to sound terrible saying this, like he has emptied that pot. He is certainly not quite the dashing, handsome young man he once was. Mm. It's not a good photo, basically. It's not Elvis's fault. It's just not a good photo.
Yeah.
But I chose Knight Rider to play for this little selection for you, which is quite an upbeat little number.
Yeah, it had a nice frenetic energy to it.
Yeah, I chose it mainly because it's called Knight Rider, and I used to love watching Knight Rider.
Yes, it doesn't feature any talking cars.
No,
as far as I know, I didn't. You know, they may have been doing it on backing vocals.
Yeah. So the singles that were released around this time by Elvis aren't on this album, so it's not really got anything. It's rated for sort of singles a bit later on, I think.
Hmm.
Although I'm under suspicion that was number one, wasn't it? That was on there. But yeah.
Suspicion.
Did we do that one?
No.
I can't remember. Was it?
No. I don't think so.
I'm gonna be charmed.
We might have done. I don't know. I don't recall one called Suspicion. We did Surrender.
No, Surrender, that's what I'm thinking of. Sorry. Yeah. I think Suspicion is a single, but later.
Okay.
Sorry, that's what I'm thinking of. I think possibly Viv Stanchel from the Bonzos covered that. Anyway.
Weird.
Yeah, so there's Elvis. There's Elvis doing Potluck.
Potluck. All right. Well, you know what? I'm resigned to it now, Paul. Go on, keep up. I'll have another soundtrack or a big famous star, please, for the next one.
Okay, well,
as long as it's just not something completely different, I want it.
Okay, so you want to, now you're used to the pattern. You don't want any shocks.
No.
Don't want anything out of left field. Scrambles frantically around. Oh, like making some noises, like sound effects. How about the best of Ball, Barber and Bilk by Kenny Ball, Chris Barber and Aka Bilk?
What? What's that one? Kenny Ball and his jazz men?
Well, they are involved.
Ah.
So basically, this album is called The Best of Ball, Barber and Bilk by band leaders Kenny Ball, Chris Barber and Aka Bilk and their bands.
Right.
It's on the Pi Golden Guinea label and it has 2 weeks at number one, although not at the same time. And it's a compilation of tracks by these three band leaders and their bands who are playing in the trad jazz style.
Right. Okay.
So, let me just run it down quickly. Kenny Ball, who was from 1930 to 2013, he was with us. He was from Essex. So, whatever you do when you think about him, you think about him going, all right, mate. And he was a trumpet player, but he was also a band leader. If you want a Beatles connection, one of them could be that he did a cover of When I'm 64 in 1967, which got to number 43.
Okay.
With his band. But he also got to number... one I want to mention is he got to number 10 in the charts with Sukiyaki, which was a cover of the song... I wrote this down so I'd get it, pronounce it right.
Well, go on then.
Uemuite Aruku by Kyu Sakamoto, which is a brilliant, brilliant song that I love. But when it was released in English-speaking language countries, they changed the name of the song to Sukiyaki, which is just the name of a beef hot pot.
Oh.
It's basically, what can we have that people might have heard of from overseas of some food? It's like calling something Foo Young or something.
Yeah.
But it's a brilliant song. But yeah, Kenny Ball's and his jazz men did a cover of that.
Yeah.
And the one I played for you from the four tracks of his on this album was an arrangement of Teddy Bear's Picnic.
Yeah. Actually, I quite liked.
Yeah, it's great. It goes on a bit, but...
We've not had much trad jazz. The only thing that we've had in the singles charts is You're Driving Me Crazy.
Yeah, that's been the only time it's particularly pierced the charts, the singles charts anyway.
And I wasn't particularly keen on that, but it's still obviously something that people were buying in numbers if... if this was getting there. And I do like the interweaving kind of brass and woodwind stuff on this kind of.
Yeah, I do as well. I like a bit of trad jazz and this Dixieland style anyway.
Yeah.
Particularly. So you've got Kenny Ball, you've got Chris Barber, who was 1930 to 2021. He was a trombonist and band leader. And it was he who had Lonnie Donegan in his group, who started doing those step-out bits, thus promoting skiffle. And then we have Aka Bilk, whose name has cropped up a couple of times, who was 1929 to 2014. He is a clarinetist and band leader. The biggest selling single of 1962 was Stranger on the Shore by Aka Bilk, which is nuts because it wasn't in our chart, because in the chart we use, it didn't get to number one.
Okay.
So.
Oh, weird.
It is weird. But they're all sort of great Dixieland jazz orchestras, jazz bands here, all combined together. So trad jazz has this huge revival in the UK, particularly after the war.
Mm.
And in the 1950s, it's groups like this that really make it popular. And if you've ever seen any live, like, Dixieland jazz stuff, and it can be just a little group, like four or five people in a pub or something like that, which is where I've seen a fair bit of it.
Mm.
On Slater Street in Liverpool, in fact, in a pub down there, I used to go and watch a bit of trad jazz just down from the Jacaranda, Beatles fans.
Yeah.
And it's brilliant. It's so energetic and...
Yeah, yeah.
It's sort of, it's...
I can imagine it'd be really wild. Good to see. You just said that. I thought, oh, I wonder if I can find any. Yeah. I'll go to the local trad jazz club in Stoke that I'm sure there is. That does sound fun. It's got some swing, man.
Yeah, definitely. It's just that Aka Bilk particularly sticks around for years and years and years and crops up on loads of TV shows and stuff becomes a bit of a, you know, Stranger on the Shore, such a big hit, but isn't quite as good as the sort of more jumping, swinging stuff.
Okay. Right, well, you know what? Now we've had something different. I really feel like sticking with something different a bit. I don't want to go back to the usual crowd that we're always with. So what we got next?
Out of the Shadows by The Shadows.
Oh, no. It's them shadows again.
There they are.
So,
but they're not in the shadows. They've crept out of the shadows.
I know. It's a bit icky to me, that is. What comes out of the shadows? They are the shadows.
No. Oh, dear. Have they left shadow leavings behind?
Shadow juice.
Seven weeks at number one, this album.
Okay.
38 weeks in the charts overall. So this is their second album, second one to go to number one. The track I chose there was The Rumble, which was the B-side to their single Dance On, which we have covered because that was number one. But that Dance On isn't on the record, but The Rumble is.
Yeah.
As the opening track.
It's, again, another one that's a bit lively and aggressive and a bit like the...
Yeah, that's
got a bit
I
of like
it.
Where were the shadows, punk, about it?
One thing that is weird on this one, I always find weird, especially when listening to like a Shadows compilation, is there's a couple where they sing.
What?
And it's like, what? The Shadows don't sing.
Just going, shut up.
Yeah, shut up, Bruce Welch.
So what are they doing singing?
I don't know.
I'll have to hear it to believe it.
Yeah, but you know, they're still doing very well at this point. They are literally just like, so where are we on the... On the chart, Out of the Shadows becomes a number one album on the 21st of October 1962. That's where we're up to with that one.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, it's fine. It's Shadow stuff. They can't do any wrong at this point, really. What I like is someone's been on Wikipedia for this album and has put a really specific bit of information, which I'm going to quote here because it's really interesting to me, anyway. Recorded on all analog equipment, well, it would have been, in real time, with each track recorded on a one-track-per-day basis with no overdubs or edits on a two-track recording machine within Studio 2. That'd be Abbey Road.
Okay.
Rather than a stereo mix being mixed down into a mono version, both stereo and mono mixes were recorded separately within the same session on the same day.
Mm.
Mistakes made during the recording sessions resulted in immediate retakes, thus multiple versions of all tracks exist in EMI's tape vaults. So, yeah, that's weird. So if you heard the stereo album of this...
You're hearing a different...
You hear a different version to the mono one.
How strange. I guess there must be... I mean, we had someone tell us, didn't we, on Twitter, that they were that rare thing, like Big Shadows fan.
Yeah.
And they'd just been listening to the series. I was thinking, oh, dear. They don't mind. I mean, we like the Shadows. I mean, Apache's at number one, isn't it, at the moment? But it's listening to the Shadows at volume, and I don't mean volume in a level of decibels, as in like the number of Shadow stuff all in one go that gets me.
Yeah.
I can only take a bit of Shadows at a time.
Yes, and we're sort of basically having them for breakfast, lunch, and dinner here at the moment, aren't we?
Well, let's tell you what, Paul. Have you got anything else to say about this album?
Just that, like, say this is their second album, their second number one album, and the follow up is The Shadows' Greatest Hits.
Blimey,
they got to greatest hits very quickly in those days.
Yeah, well, I've had enough of the Shadows now. Let's put them to bed.
Let me just say, Gary, because you probably haven't got this on your list before we get any further.
Okay,
that we also have on this list. On stage with the George Mitchell Minstrels, and also the return to the charts at number one of the Black and White Minstrel Show, and that's all I'm going to say about that.
All right, okay, well, we covered that rubbish last time, didn't we? So,
yeah.
Let's get on to the next different thing, and as I say, the Shadows have had their day, I think. Enough of that. They can go back into the Shadows. What have we got next, Paul?
Oh, dear. This comedic setup is almost as tedious as the Shadows themselves at this point. That sounds terrible. I don't think the Shadows are tedious, but we are back with Cliff Richard and the Shadows and the Summer Holiday original soundtrack.
Fellas, how would you like the unique opportunity of doing 7 days overtime with no pay? Yeah. Look, seriously, fellas, we're in a bit of a jam. You see, we've just...
7 days to a holiday. And there's such a lot to do. Come on, fellas, it's up to you. We're in an awful stew. Get us out of this spot.
You know what? I think I actually have this album.
Really?
I think so, yeah. I think I inherited it with all my vinyl.
Okay.
And I think when you put...
When you say inherited it, that makes it sound much more dramatic than it is. Your father-in-law gave you it.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, a big pile of vinyls, some of which he'd inherited.
Oh, we should say vinyl, don't say vinyls.
Vinyl.
Thank you.
But I'll have to double check, but if I remember rightly, because I was listening to them all, I've given up on that for a few months, but I was listening to whatever the next album was in the pile one by one. It was like, oh, Shadows track. Oh, Cliff track. Oh, Shadows track. It's obviously peppered with the Shadows stuff, isn't it? And then you have a Cliff stuff.
Yeah. So we've heard a fair bit from this already.
Mm.
So like Summer Holiday, we've heard Foot Tapper by the Shadows, Bachelor Boy and The Next Time, all being singles at number one.
Yeah.
And I've chosen for us to listen to 7 Days to a Holiday, the opening so track.
This is what I think when you chose the one from West Side Story, it would do to me.
Yeah.
Is listen to this one. This is the one that makes me go, oh, God. Like that seamless moving between acting and singing, that kind of like, hey guys, but what are we doing? We need some
Cliff to as get much. Ready. Yeah, it's Cliff as much a parody of Cliff as Cliff has ever been, almost.
And yeah, we're gonna get ready. We've got 7 days. The 7 days. Hey guys, come and help me clean the wheels. To go to it's whatever. It's just. Sickening.
We've got to get a Haynes manual for this bus. I chose that one because I thought it would really annoy you, but it also I chose it to make a point about the difference between sort of how the Shadows are presented, because the Shadows have such a definite sound, and what Cliff is doing, which isn't necessarily relying on the Shadows, because obviously the Shadows aren't playing on this. You know, this is an orchestra thing with backing singers and his sort of team of the actors in the film. But it has an uninterrupted 14-week run at number one, this album. You know, this is most of the others we've had, you know, they go in at number one, they drop down a bit, they might go back a little bit, you know, like West Side Story's in for a week, out for a week, in for a week, you know, like that, stuff like that. But we get 14 weeks at number one, which is pretty unassailable as far as a pop record, albeit an original soundtrack so far.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I still kind of tempted to want to watch it as well.
I think we're gonna. I reckon we're gonna have to do at least one Cliff movie because it's so important to early British.
Yeah,
pop.
This might be the one.
Okay,
I'll dig out whether I've got the vinyl as well, so I can be certain about it. I don't think it must be really. I can't think what else it would be. It's definitely one with movie soundtrack stuff and The Shadows every other song.
Yeah,
because I remember thinking I like The Shadow bits. Anyway, so that does that close us out for 1960.
Let's see where we're at. Basically, so the Summer Holiday soundtrack, this is 1963 now.
Okay.
It's so that gets to number one on the 27th of January 1963 and then stays at number one for 14 weeks.
So we've just got like two-thirds, three-quarters of 1963 to go.
Yeah, so you could probably fit loads of albums
in
that
time, loads, because we've done loads already just for the first year, haven't we? Yeah. Okay, so... What have we got next then? I take it it's another soundtrack or something like that.
It's only the soundtrack to our lives, Gary.
What?
It's Please Please Me by the Beatles.
In my mind there's no sorrow. Don't you know that it's so?
Oh, them Beatles.
The lads.
Here they are.
Yeah.
here they come to save the day.
Yeah,
I told you.
They are mighty mice.
Yeah.
And I've just gone on about Cliff and his uninterrupted 14 weeks at number one. How about an uninterrupted 30 weeks at number one?
Ooh, yes, please.
And how about 70 weeks in the top 100 and many, many more within the top 200?
Right.
And getting back to like number 38 in the year 2009.
Okay.
You know, how about being, after being the number one album for 30 weeks, being the number two album for 16 weeks?
Yeah.
The numbers are nuts.
Staggering.
Yeah. And there's not much to go over with this, really, because we know it so well. I've chosen There's a Place to go on the playlist this week.
There's a place for this album, and it's number one.
Yes, indeed. But one of the reasons I've chosen There's a Place is because if we go back up to the West Side Story soundtrack, there's a song on there that's called Somewhere, which is also known as There's a Place for Us.
Oh.
And according to Paul McCartney, not Paul me, according to Paul McCartney, that was one of the places they found the lyrical inspiration for their song, There's a Place.
Ah.
So even though it's mainly a John-led composition, they did write it together, and Paul said, I had the West Side Story soundtrack, and we used that as a bit of inspiration.
Ah, okay.
There's a little link back there, you see.
So we're not going to cover all ground. We've obviously talked about every song on this album, and some of them more than once. Well, no. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe, I don't know. So let's see, I mean, what... possibly could have toppled this then
We close out 1963, let me just say I found a little review from an article in the Liverpool Echo from the 23rd of March 1963, which is essentially when this album comes out, and just a little snippet from this, which is from this off the record by Disker in the Liverpool Echo, and he says, to avoid any bias in favour of this Liverpool group, I have racked my brains to recall any other vocal outfit, British or American, capable of producing such full-blooded, hard-hitting LP entertainment in the style of the Beatles. I have listened to around 20 new albums each month for the last 10 years, but I remain convinced that the Beatles have hit the 63 pop scene with a brand of musical excitement which is unique. It's like, wow. I mean, that's... yeah, it's a Liverpool paper, so they're probably a bit biased towards these Merseybeat groups, but that's a really good little thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
That Disker was writing in his off-the-record column. Diska was Tony Barrow, who, although he was employed by Decca at the time, was also being paid to work freelance promoting the Beatles.
Oh, so clever.
Yeah. And eventually he leaves Decca and goes to form essentially NEMS press and PR division. Tiny Barrow, Tony Barrow.
You need your champions.
Yeah, so it's funny reading through, and it's like this is a thing in the Liverpool Echo, and it's doing his off the record bit.
If anyone would like to pretend to be a journalist and write really good stuff about my albums and songs.
Well, he was a journalist. I mean, he was a journalist.
Who is a journalist, but doesn't want to be paid. Just write nice stuff about me.
Yeah. It's all right. Tony Barrow was getting paid by Brian at this point, yeah. Anyway. But it's a great little couple of paragraphs there about, like, I've listened to 20 new albums each month for the last 10 years. Which, you can read that in different ways. It's a bit like, I've listened to around 20 new albums each month for the last 10 years. I think you'll find. it's not there. Anyway, that's how I reckon Tony Barrow speaks.
Okay. Well, after all of his PR and their success, I know there's at least one more album on the list, Paul.
Yeah,
just tell me that we can get back to some soundtracks, will you?
Only the soundtrack to our lives continued.
Not another one. How many lives have we got?
How many Beatles are there? Oh, no, that's not right. That's not helpful. With the Beatles, by the Beatles.
What?
I want to be your lover, baby. I want to be your man. I want to be your lover, baby. I want to be your man. Love you like no other, baby. Like no other can. Love you like no other, baby. Like no other can. I want to be your man. I want to be your man.
So what knocks Please Please Me off the top is the Beatles with the Beatles, which spends 21 uninterrupted weeks at number one and again recharts in 2009. Why did they rechart in 2009, Gary?
Because of events.
Because they were issued on the remastered CDs in 2009.
I thought it would be something like that. I forgot.
Yeah.
Can I ask?
You can ask.
When we've been doing the charts,
mm-hmm.
you know, obviously the singles don't appear on the albums, but I didn't realise we'd got to the second album coming out.
Yeah, basically.
When did it come out? Was it towards the end of 63 then?
Yeah. Is this
so what single accompanies or is after the album?
Basically, this is She Loves You, and so we've just covered She Loves You and I Want to Hold Your Hand, haven't we?
Yes, they are associated with the Beatles sessions.
Except in my mind, I can't do that because they're not on the record. Whereas with Please Please Me, you at least have Love Me Do and Please Please Me are on the record.
Yeah.
I can't associate She Loves You as being from with the Beatles because it's not.
Mm.
They did these separate sessions for singles, but you could have, like, it's a very easy historical thing to look back and bracket them together, really.
Okay, fair enough.
I struggled over what to put on the playlist for this, and I chose I Want to Be Your Man in the end because Ringo's just great.
Oh, why not? It's a good song.
It is a good song. Ringo does it really, really well.
Yeah.
Can't argue with it. And also this week, just as we're recording, apparently with the Beatles passed the 500 million streams mark on Spotify.
Very nice.
Which means that the only Beatles album that hasn't passed that is Beatles for Sale, which is interesting.
Okay. Is that next? An album in the world? No, it's...
No.
I can't... I've got a poster behind me.
Have a look at your poster, Gary. We're only three along.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Next but one, then.
Yeah.
It's just when I said, is it next? You were like, no. But it's just the next but one.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Yeah.
But there you go. The Beatles have made themselves known big style.
So this is why, I guess, when we've just covered 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 albums, and seven of them took us up to the best part of a year and a bit. and two of them closed out the year, you're thinking that the next time we look at this, it may not be much in it.
It's gonna be different from here on in.
Yeah, we'll take a call. We'll have a look at what the actual numbers are, and might just cover it quickly in an episode if it's not going to be that that interesting to talk about. But yeah, well, as we maybe even more so than the singles charts, you really have seen a good characterization, mostly apart from some kind of outliers, of this change of this seed change, haven't we, really?
Yeah, it's interesting.
Soundtracks, Elvis, Cliff, Shadows, Soundtracks, Soundtracks, Beatles.
Yep. That's it.
That's the end. That's it. That's the condensed history of how the Beatles came about.
Yeah, you could write that down, put it in a book.
Yeah. But that doesn't mean there won't be any more soundtracks and other people.
No, it doesn't, no.
No. It's not like there is nothing but the Beatles, as we have already discovered, because there's the big gaps in the singles, you know. We kind of got From Me to You, and then there was quite...
And then basically there's a big gap where the Beatles are still massively successful with the Twist and Shout EP, but we're not covering
that, yeah.
EPs.
Are missing big chunks, aren't we?
Yeah, and it remains to this day a big sort of blind spot of mine in terms of their discography as to the importance of the EPs, because I've never owned them as individual items. But they were vastly important in their early, particularly in their early sort of points, because the EP, four tracks, like, is like having a mini album, and it's another price point for people to opt in at,
yeah,
as well. And something like, so the Twist and Shout EP was in that big gap where they didn't have a single out, but it was so popular it was getting into the single charts itself.
Wow. Excellent.
Madness.
Cool. Well, that concludes our album retrospective for the last 2 years of the chronological period that we are covering. And we will be back next week then with just carrying on with 1964.
Well, starting 1964 even.
Well, carrying on and starting with carrying on the series.
Carrying on.
Starting.
With
starting to carry on. We might also, I'm going to start mentioning this now just to give people a heads up, we might take a break after 64, because it is basically halfway through. Because by that point, we should be getting towards early summer. So we might have a few weeks off, at least in podcast real time, you know. So just going to let you know that.
We haven't gone away.
We're not leaving. We're just planning.
We'll try and find some specials to put in the gaps.
I'm starting a new job, and summer's coming. And
I'm lazy.
And we've still got quite a way to go.
Yes, we have.
We've got a bit of ground to cover yet. So we may have a little mid-season kind of like hiatus for a couple of weeks, but not very long. But anyway, don't let that put you off, because next week we will be here as normal. So we will see you next week. Bye-bye.
Gee, Officer Beatles.